This is an episode in English, but I have an intro in Spanish. So if you want to go straight to the interview, just jump there.
Esto es El Martínez.
Para el resto que nos quedamos acá y antes de entrar en materia, les quiero contar que estuve hace poco grabando los primeros episodios de lo que va a ser el inicio de un nuevo podcast. Y como ya les he venido contando, este podcast nuevo tiene que ver con gente que pone las cosas patas para arriba, ¿no? Gente que le gusta con sus ideas transformar lo que existe, pero no necesariamente clavados tanto en la publicidad, sino más bien en la comunicación, en el activismo, en la narrativa, en la tecnología. Un poco va por ahí la cosa. Así que, nada, quería compartirles que ese podcast ya está. Ya grabamos 3 episodios. Y de hecho, les voy a dar una primicia. Y es que el primer episodio de todos estos es con el gran Carlos Vallala. Y sí. Si bien hablamos de comunicación y de ideas y de tecnología, no necesariamente es un podcast meramente publicitario. Así que, bueno, quería dejarles ese adelanto. Dicho eso, vámonos a esta noche de amor sobre el porro. O sea, que le gane el amor al porno, así como suena. Pero bueno, que sea Marley la que nos hable de este tema tan interesante.
Ella es fundadora de la plataforma Make Love Not Porn,
que promueve el Social Sex Revolution hecha por gente real, después de haber sido fundadora y presidenta de VVH Estados Unidos
y nombrada publicista del año por Advertising Woman of New York.
Además, lanzó If We Run the World, una plataforma web que reunió las nuevas intenciones humanas para convertirlas en acción colectiva.
Obviamente íbamos a empezar la noche hablando de Make Love Not Porn, que es este emprendimiento interesantísimo, del cual, por cierto, ya me hice socio y está buenísimo.
Make Love Not Porn came about because I date younger men. They tend to be in their 20s. And about 16, 17 years ago now, I began realizing through dating younger men that when we don't talk openly and honestly about sex in the real world, porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way.
Hablamos de cómo en este emprendimiento la gente es socia del proyecto y cuando ella dice not porn es porque efectivamente no es porn. Es gente que muestra cómo hace el amor en la plataforma y por el cual la gente le paga. Entonces es un win-win situation donde además puedes invertir y ser parte de este emprendimiento.
Today, Make Love Not Porn is, as our tagline says, pro-sex, pro-porn, pro-knowing the difference. So we are the world's first and only user-generated, 100% human-curated, social sex video-sharing platform.
Hablamos también de cómo hizo para abrir VVH en Estados Unidos, de esos momentos en los que estaba todo arrancando y de cómo no es fácil cuando uno empieza, aún con un nombre como el de VVH.
You're right, Parna, in that. So, you know, as everyone who follows me knows, my tagline across all my social media profiles is I like to blow shit up, I'm the Michael Bayer business. But I use that tagline not as a bit of creativity, a bit of whimsy, a bit of fun. I use it entirely deliberately because I'm a big fan of be your own filter. When I characterize what I do in that way, it attracts to me the people who want what I do. It repels the ones who don't. And I want to repel the ones who don't because they're a waste of time, effort and money.
Hablamos también sobre la mujer en la industria. Y que según yo, en estos 10 años, las cosas han cambiado bastante y ella categóricamente me explicó que no, que para nada.
I wish society understood the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men. and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender's allowed to openly celebrate either fact. We'd all be better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful Twitter exchange last year between two men.
Y terminamos hablando de la plataforma If We Run the World que ella creó, y en la que las intenciones se convertían en movimiento y se llevaban a cabo, no solamente por la gente, sino también por las empresas.
As everyone who follows me knows, my tagline across all my social media profiles is I like to blow shit up, I'm the Michael Mayer business. But I use that tagline not as a bit of creativity, a bit of whimsy, a bit of fun. I use it entirely deliberately because I'm a big fan of be your own filter. When I characterize what I do in that way, it attracts to me the people who want what I do. It repels the ones who don't. And I want to repel the ones who don't because they're a waste of time, effort and money.
Que comience pues una noche en la que el amor le gane al porno y efectivamente todo el mundo sea parte de un mismo emprendimiento. Así que, ¿por qué no levantamos cada quien su copa de champán para recibirla? Porque ella es Cindy Gallop. Hi Cindy, how are you?
I'm good. Thrilled to be here.
Where do I find you today?
So I'm in my apartment in New York, in Midtown Manhattan.
Nice, nice. So is it cold there now or?
It's warming up a bit, but it's cold and rainy today, so not okay. That great.
I'm here in LA, so it's shine. I mean, there's a lot of sun, but it's still a little bit chilly. All right, Cindy. So you are in New York. I'm in LA, and now we're gonna go to Cannes. How do you see that?
Sounds great.
Do you like the idea?
Sounds great. Yeah.
All right. Let's go then. Let's go.
Bienvenidos a El Martínez. ¿Qué le servimos para empezar?
Okay, so we are here at the Martinez. Cindy, how many times have you been here?
Honestly, I've lost count. So, you know, many times. And I'm very fond of the bar at the Martinez, and I'm very fond of the Martinez cocktail as well.
Oh, okay. So if you are already aware of the... François, s'il vous plaît. What would you like to drink today, Cindy?
Definitely the Martinez cocktail.
The Martinez cocktail, yeah. S'il vous plaît, deux Martinez cocktail. Venga. All right. Cindy, it's really nice to be here with you, having a couple of Martinez drinks. And remember, I mean, you have an amazing, when I'm thinking about communication, advertising, like, all the milestones that you have achieved is amazing, but there's one in particular that I would like to start today, and it has to do with make love not porn. Like I'd really find fascinating just the title of it, right? But I want to go deeper into that, and that will be like my first thing because. I mean, everybody who see here in the tables can see the t-shirt that it has a big heart that says makelovenotporn.com. But the other guys that are over there that are not seeing, believe me, it's a beautiful t-shirt. But tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I have a business that is a complete and total accident because I never consciously intentionally set out to do anything that I very strangely find myself doing now. So Make Love Not Porn came about because I date younger men. They tend to be in their 20s. And about 16, 17 years ago now, I began realizing through dating younger men that when we don't talk openly and honestly about sex in the real world, porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way. So I found myself encountering a number of sexual behavioral memes in bed. I went, whoa, I know where that behavior is coming from. I thought, gosh, if I'm experiencing this, other people must be as well. I didn't know that because 16 years ago, nobody was talking about this. Right. Nobody was writing about it. This was me in isolation as a naturally action-oriented person going, I'm going to do something about this. So 15 years ago, I put up Pure's little side venture on no money, a tiny clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that in its original iteration was kind of a public service announcement.
Okay.
The concept is porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. I launched it at the TED conference in 2009. I became the only TED speaker to say the words, come on my face, on the TED stage, six times in succession. The talk went viral as a result, and it drove this extraordinary global response to my tiny website that I had never anticipated. Thousands of people wrote to me from all around the world, young and old, male and female, straight and gay, pouring their hearts out, telling me things about their sex lives and their porn-watching habits they'd never told anyone before, and I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so I then felt I had a personal responsibility. I had to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that would make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And so I turned it into a business designed to do good and make money simultaneously, which is what I believe all business should be, by the way. So today, Make Love Not Porn is, as our tagline says, pro-sex, pro-porn, pro-knowing the difference. So we are the world's first and only user-generated, 100% human-curated, social sex video-sharing platform. We're kind of what Facebook would be if it allowed you to openly, happily, socially, sexually self-express, which it clearly doesn't. The way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. And what we're doing is we are socializing, normalizing, and destigmatizing sex, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to promote consent, communication, good sexual values and behavior. We are literally sex education through real world demonstration.
Wow. Wow. I find it inspiring, and it's crazy when I hear you, like, thinking that we are in 2024, no? Me, myself, I'm also in that space where I do believe that sex should be something that has to be spoken openly in a health way, you know, like there's like everybody thinks about it, dreams about it. Like Freud, you know, said, like we are all driven by sex. But when I hear you, it's interesting to understand that still a lot of places that are full of shadows, no? And I would like to understand, Cindy, what were those comments or stories or life stories that you saw and you said, hey, this is really a problem. And with that, I would like to understand also, what is the difference between Make Love and porn?
Sure. So as I said, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, i.e. produced performative entertainment, Make Love Not Porn is the documentary. We are real world sex. No one's performing. No one's professional. No one's scripted. No one's doing this for somebody else's entertainment. We are real world sex.
Nobody's getting paid, basically, right?
No. And that is not the difference, Parna.
Okay.
Because when I came up with the idea for Make Love Not Porn 15 years ago, I foresaw the creator economy when I concepted our revenue sharing business model to democratize access to income. So at Make Love Not Porn, our members pay to subscribe, rent, and stream social sex videos. Half the income goes to our contributors, whom we call our Make Love Not Porn stars. But the important thing is, you know, when we launched years ago, I wrote a blog post announcing our revenue sharing business model. And I titled it, How Make Love Not Porn Can Help the Global Economy. And I began this blog post by saying, You know all those little scam ads that pop up on the internet going, make $2,000 a week working from home? Well, now you can. And so I said, you know, and this is, 11 years ago when we launched, I said, you know, my vision is that one day Make Love Not Porn should hit the kind of critical mass where your real world sex video gets 1 million rentals at $5 per rental, and we give you half the income. Now, we're a very long way away from that because my tiny team and I fight an enormous battle every single day, not even to grow Make Love Not Porn, just to keep it operational. Every piece of business infrastructure any other tech startup takes for granted, we can't. The small print always says no adult content, and that's all pervasive. But even with all the battles we fight, I'm happy to report that during the pandemic, you know, during lockdown, when so many people lost their jobs, couldn't find work, our Make Love Not Porn stars told us that our monthly payouts were helping them survive, you know, covering their rent, enabling them to live. And that's wonderful. And so that's what I conceived our model around, you know, a way to make money doing what comes naturally.
Solo para desconocedores.
El Martínez.
What are the barriers that you have find? Like I can, when I start thinking about the business model, right? Like, as you say, you come to a TED talk to speak out about something that is not spoken, you know, and then you find a need that is, that it can make this big. But I'm sure that, that of course it's an industry, that also has a lot of, problems. You know, when I think about problems, it's like, how do you deal with who's into the platform? Because I think that most of the people are there, you know, which I like. I like the fact of being like a documentary, like the documentary side of adult content or making love, showing it to someone. But I'm sure that there are, there's an industry, right? Like when you think worldwide, like people being used and stuff, how do you secure yourself that you are not, you know, giving platform to that?
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So first of all, Parna, I am not part of the porn industry. I'm pioneering a whole new industry that's never existed, social sex. Okay? We are social media that allows the one universal era of human experience no other social network or platform will permit. But I'm glad you asked that question because I'm going to contextualize my answer in the broader tech landscape as a whole.
Right.
The young white male founders of the giant tech platforms that dominate all our lives today, they are not the primary targets, online or offline, of harassment, abuse, sexual assault, racism, violence, rape, revenge porn. Therefore, they did not and they do not proactively design for the prevention of any of those things on their platforms. Mm. And we see the results of that around us every single day. Those of us who are most at risk every single day, women, black people, people of color, LGBTQ, the disabled, we design safe spaces and safe experiences, but we don't get funded. Only 1.7% of all venture capital last year went to female founders, and that is why we have still not seen what the future of the internet could be when it's designed and built through the female lens at scale. So I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens to be the safest place on the internet.
Wow.
And that's because I designed it around what everybody else should have. Nobody else did. Human curation. There is no self-publishing of anything on Make Love Not Porn. Our curators watch every frame of every video from beginning to end before we approve or reject and we publish it. No one else does that. We review every post on every member profile. And by the way, on Make Love Not Porn, your posts can be as safe work or not safe work as you like, but we review them, we approve or reject, and we publish them. No one else does that. We review every comment on every video before we approve or reject, and we publish them. No one else does that. We can vouch for every single piece of content on our platform in a way that nobody else can. And here's the key point about that. At Make Love Not Porn, we are tiny, bootstrapping, have no money, and we've human curated everything for 11 years. Imagine what Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, OnlyFans could do with their billions if they chose to. Safety on the internet is not a matter of viability, it's a matter of will. And it is absolutely appalling, therefore, that we cannot get funded. Investors will not touch us because we're to do with sex. It's appalling because ultimately our mission at Make Love Not Porn is to help end rape culture globally. And by the way, that may sound like a very big vision, but we have 11 years of proof of concept at a micro level. We help end rape culture by doing something incredibly simple that nevertheless nobody else anywhere on the internet is doing. We end rape culture by showing you how wonderful great consensual communicative sex is in the real world. Our social sex videos role model good sexual values and good sexual behavior. And here's the important part. We make all of that aspirational versus what you see in porn and popular culture. One man left a comment on one of our videos saying, "This video makes me want to be a better man in the bedroom and in life."
Wow. And that's very important. Like I agree with you that media in general gives a point of view, and especially porn, on how sex should be. And at the end, it's, as you say, a fiction, no? And I remember this book, maybe you know, Cindy, the height, in Spanish was the informe height in the 70s, that a woman wrote and asked thousands of women about their sex life.
I'm talking in the
70s, you remember?
Sherry Height and Nancy Fry did the same thing.
I remember reading that book when I was like 14, And it really like really gave me a whole different point of view on how women actually have sex and make love, and that's why when I hear you, it kind of makes sense when you think it's the sex through the lens of a woman that is explaining or giving a point of view or how consensual sex is behaved.
It's not sex from my point of view. I just brought a female lens to designing a platform that showcases how the world has sex that is completely safe, which is
right.
Something safe. No male founder ever does, because they're not at risk like a woman is. And so here's the interesting thing about Make Love Not Porn. I designed Make Love Not Porn to be fully diverse and inclusive, and we are. Our members, our Make Love Not Porn stars, are all ages, male, female, trans, non-binary, straight, LGBTQ, asexual. We're a global platform, all races, ethnicities. But in the 11 years we've operated, we've discovered that Make Love Not Porn is especially a revelation to men. More men send us grateful emails, leave appreciative comments than anybody else, because we are something utterly unique that men will find nowhere else on the internet, which is a safe space where men can be and watch other men being open, emotional, and vulnerable around sex. You would not believe the number of men who write to us regularly and say, "I just watched my first video on Make Love Not Porn, and afterwards I cried."
Wow.
I've said for years, I wish society understood the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either fact. We'd all be better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful Twitter exchange last year between two men. So the first man had tweeted, as a joke, obviously, "Hey guys, I've got this really weird fetish. I've got this kink. Well, I want to watch porn where people are honest, loving, loyal, decent, and really like each other. Hit me up with your hottest links, please." And another man replied and said, "There's this website called Make Love Not Porn where you can watch real couples making love." He said, "I watched a video where the woman said to her man, 'I love you,' while they're making love." He said, "Sincerely, I cried when I heard that." Make Love Not Porn is one of the solutions to toxic masculinity.
Cheers. Here is our cheers for going against the toxicity in masculine behavior. And when I hear you talk, Cindy, I cannot stop thinking about this definition that you have, that is that you like to blow shit up, no? Like you say, you're the Michael Bay of business, and that's why you're consulting. And so, I mean, of course, as a founder of a super agency like BBH and all your experience on this field,
How do you feel that coming from the advertising world, where you are always trying to find, you know, that line, like going into the line, the risky line, that to blow shit up is helping you to, when you think about giving that point of view to new companies? Because I don't think it's for anybody, right? Like when not everybody would like to blow shit up, but I think that's when I think is where you start doing things that really can make an impact, no?
Well, you know, you're right, Parna, in that. So, you know, as everyone who follows me knows, my tagline across all my social media profiles is, I like to blow shit up, I'm the Michael Bayer business. But I use that tagline not as a bit of creativity, a bit of whimsy, a bit of fun. I use it entirely deliberately because I'm a big fan of be your own filter. When I characterize what I do in that way, it attracts to me the people who want what I do. It repels the ones who don't. And I want to repel the ones who don't because they're a waste of time, effort, and money.
Interesting. Interesting because I feel that when you're talking about how it's not only about creativity, but it's also having your own filter, it has also a lot to do with being free, but with a responsibility in a point of view. That's what I'm thinking, right?
It's not. It is literally a very good filter that I've been recommending for decades that ad agencies operate.
Okay.
So 25 years ago, when I moved here to New York to start up BBH New York, that was back in the day when every agency had a showreel. Okay, you know, got the old U-matic out and put it into the machine.
The U-matic, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so, you know, and obviously, you know, I was starting up an agency in the world's toughest advertising marketplace. We were pitching all the time. We were trying to get business and clients. So, you know, the first thing I did in every credentials meeting was to play our showreel for the client and to watch their faces. Because if they reacted badly to our showreel, went, you know, then they were not our kind of client. And there was no point pursuing the dialogue. That's what I mean by be your own filter. You know, every successful ad agency has a very clear brand positioning and point of view. And it gets the clients it does because that's what they want. And by the way, there are agencies that are not particularly aspiring to be anything distinctive. And they get clients who are not particularly aspiring to be anything distinctive.
Un bar inclausurable. El Martínez.
True, and that's why it's important. I mean, when I see that line, that you blow shit up, at the end you are giving a point of view and understanding who wants to work with you and who doesn't, in order to not lose the time, no, which is precious. And sometimes you spend, you know, in the industry, a lot of time speaking with people and you know, losing time and. It's like, come on, we're not made for each other. And that's,
yeah, exactly.
I think that's where you're nice.
Yeah.
So what kind of work are you, beyond Make Love Not Porn nowadays, what are the industries that you are more into with your point of view?
You know, Make Love Not Porn is my business. It's my full focus. It's my full-time focus. But because I have such challenges raising funding, And by the way, I'm just going to take this opportunity to say to our listeners, if you appreciate what I do for our industry, please go to wefunder.com/makelovenotporn and micro-invest in our first ever equity crowdfunding campaign for Make Love Not Porn.
Oh, okay. Wait. Tell me more about it, because I would like to be an investor. Yep, I will totally.
Fantastic. I mentioned earlier, you know, all of our challenges with business infrastructure. And, you know, one of them is that historically, you know, no crowdfunding platform would accept Make Love Not Porn. The only reason we've been able to launch a campaign is because of the wonderful actress Jameela Jamil of The Good Place, She-Hulk. So she has a wonderful community called iWay. She interviewed me for her iWay podcast. She's a huge fan of Make Love Not Porn. She wants to encourage her community to fund female founders. And so she brought us to WeFunder who welcomed us because of her.
Okay.
And so just last month, we launched our first ever equity crowdfunding campaign. And so I'm urging everyone in our industry, if they appreciate what I've done for the industry, to support me and my business by micro-investing in Make Love Not Porn. The minimum investment is $100, so it's very affordable. Obviously, put in the most you can, but I would love, you know, my own people to fund my business.
Totally.
So that's one of the ways I'm raising funding. But, you know, until I raise much more serious funding, I still have to support myself alongside Make Love Not Porn. And so I do that through paid consultancy, paid speaking, and I do personal coaching as well. And, you know, this is where my tagline came from, because I explained that I consult very selectively only for clients and brands who want to change the game in their particular sector. So you come to me for radical, innovative, groundbreaking, transformative. I don't do status quo. And so that's why I say I like to blow shit up, and I work with clients who want to blow shit up.
Nice. I like that point. I mean, I think that when you are true to who you are and understanding, like, okay, this is where I belong to, no? Like, okay, game changers, people who really, like, I don't see, I'm just saying, no, but insurance companies trying to blow shit up. But you never know, right? Like, there's always space.
No, insurance companies are a fantastic place to blow shit up.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's
so,
for sure.
So I consult with a number of small agency owners.
Okay.
And, you know, and obviously a concern for them is business development. So I will ask them, okay, you know, who's your dream client? You know, what clients do you want to work with? And I'll always hear Apple, Nike, Google. And I go, no, guys, you know, instantly strike that from your mindset, okay? Because the sexy clients are not the ones you want to work with, first of all, because they have everybody beating down their door. And so they can afford to treat agencies really badly, you know. And secondly, because they have everybody beating down their door, they can afford not to pay agencies what they deserve to be paid. So I go, instead, focus your business development strategy on two key words: big and boring.
Big and boring.
You want big and boring clients.
Okay.
Because first of all, big and boring has budgets. Big and boring has money. And secondly, nobody is beating down the doors of big and boring, and so they are enormously flattered when you come after them, and they will absolutely have that conversation. And then thirdly, big and boring offers the opportunity for creative turnaround, spectacular work and phenomenal case studies in a way that the sexy ones don't, because everyone's doing that for them anyway.
I like it. I mean, me being, I also had my agency that I sold, and now we are with Rainbow Lobster. It's not an agency, but it's a different way of thinking. But I like the way you're saying. It's like, you know, sometimes when you are thinking about your own agency, it's like you are not using, you know, the knowledge that you use for the brands. Like, even for advertising yourself, like, who are you and what are you doing in the world and what kind of clients, that's where you're going, you should go to or take it. It's not something that you stop to think. Maybe that's something that you're seeing with when you were consulting with small owner agencies.
What I I've been banging on about this for 25 years. You know, it is enormously important that agencies do for themselves what they do for their clients, because we are, you know, we are that very rare thing, which is an industry that puts enormous effort into crafting a brilliant product that goes out into the world without our branding on it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows who made that ad. And, you know, I lobbied back in the day to be able to put agency branding on ads. But B, it is therefore incredibly important to make damn sure that your clients credit you for the work you do. I've never forgotten how many, many years ago, and when I was running BBH New York, I went to the The big client conference here in the US, which is the Association of National Advertisers, a Masters of Marketing conference. I think this was the first year I went to it, actually, because as a startup agency, we had to be careful what we spent our money on. Anyway, so I went to the ANA Masters of Marketing and sat through the first day of the conference. It ran over 2 or 3 days, I think. And so the opening session was Larry Ruff, who was then the CMO of McDonald's, followed by a bunch of clients. And I was horrified at the fact that of all of the client speakers on that first day who were showing brilliant campaigns on stage, only one credited their agency.
Wow.
So Larry Ruff opened this conference. And this is when McDonald's had just launched globally the I'm Loving It campaign.
Right. Okay?
And that was huge and hugely successful. Larry Ruff stood on that stage. I remember his exact words. He said to the audience, and, you know, we're looking for that key tagline that would pull everything together, that would skewer all our communications, you know. And in the end, it was a small agency in Germany that came up with I'm Loving It.
Wow.
He didn't name the agency. And that small agency in Germany could have so bloody done with the business generated when the CMO of McDonald's, as he should have done, names you on stage to an audience full of client marketers looking for agencies. The same thing happened with the next speaker. I can't remember who all the others were, but I do know that only one credited, it was a woman, credited her agency for the work they'd done. That is appalling. You know, I would brief our clients at BBH, you know, when they were being interviewed on the Today Show, whatever, I'd go, okay, make sure you mention the agency, make sure you mention the agency. Okay, now, you know, clients are unnerved, you know, being filmed or whatever, so they didn't always remember, but I just made damn sure I had it said to them, please credit this campaign to us.
Esto es El Martínez.
That does not happen enough.
It doesn't. And even when you are talking about the PR campaign following by the, you know, and after so much work, etc., forget about the IP, Cindy, that we know that we are not in the industry, you know, like in the entertainment business, it's such important. Like the idea is something that you can live on for years. Forget about that, but just credit that something is so important.
Oh, yeah. No, but we should absolutely have the opportunity to own our IP as well. Mm. Okay. So, you know, I wrote into our contracts again back in the day at BBH New York, you know, when we pitched, we owned the idea if the client did not appoint us to the account, to make damn sure that couldn't get ripped off. No, I'm a huge believer in, you know, there are so many instances in our industry of agencies, you know, creating extraordinary value for clients and never seeing any financial benefit from it whatsoever. And that should not be the case. In fact, you know, I also tried to introduce more creative forms of compensation. So our founding client in BBH New York was Reebok. And we were given the Reebok Classic side of the business, which is non-sports shoes, the non-athletic side. And I proposed to the CMO that, you know, for every Reebok sneaker, every pair of Reebok sneakers sold over and above their sales targets for the year, we should get 1 cent. And I did that because I thought, I want to propose something that is very low stakes for them. You know, it's above hitting your goals. So if you hit your goal, you know, and it's 1 cent per pair of sneakers. But if we exceed, that could turn into something. Anyway, sadly, I could not get them to agree because it was not what they were used to. You know, but I was always looking for ways for us to benefit from the value that we created for our clients, because not enough agencies insist on that, even much less so today. And we absolutely deserve, we can transform the fortunes of brands, and we deserve to get, you know, a commensurate financial compensation for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a little bit of how Michael Jordan proposed it to Nike, no? When you see that case where he will be you know, a shareholder on the brand that he's actually building, no, that is Air. But I agree that it's an industry that in general, we have been bad at trying to find new ways of or you know, creating new opportunities of. But again, it's all about to being also creative in that sense, no? But tell me a little bit, Cindy, about you arriving '98 launching BBH New York and Reebok as your first client. How was that? How did you? And I would like to be in that moment when you are just, you know, with a lot of dreams and wanted to do things, and then you have, how did you get your first, how do you get Reebok basically?
I got Reebok the way anybody gets business in our industry, which is through a relationship. So we're very fortunate because at BBH London back in the 90s, I ran our Coca-Cola business, and the marketing director we worked with was a wonderful man called John Wardley. And he went on to be the CMO of Reebok. But we had a great relationship. And so when he knew that we were opening up in the US, he wanted to be our founding client. And so, you know, that was how we got the Reebok Classic business without having to pitch for it, which is fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
Other than that, though, I have to tell you, you know, every client we won in the US, it didn't matter if BBH had them globally. We had to pitch for and win them all over again. So, again, when we opened, we were in a stealth pitch for the launch of Axe into the US for Unilever. Even though BBH had the business, you know, back in London, we had to pitch for that. And we won it. And I oversaw the launch of Axe into the US back in 2002, very successfully. We launched in August of 2002, and Unilever had said to us, you know, our goal is to have 3% share of the men's deodorant market by year end in 4 months. We made it 4%.
Wow.
That was a huge success. equally, BBH had the Johnny Walker business, you know, globally out of London. We had to push for and win Johnny Walker US, which we did.
Nice. No, it's of course, BBH is a brand itself that when we think about, you know, blowing shit up, and that's why I wanted to ask you about that, because it was so important going into the US market. And later, there's one, the If We Run the World, not campaign, but how would you get the action, or how would you?
That was a business. That was my first startup.
Beyond the business, how would you call it, a movement? Would you call it a?
No, it was deliberately a business. It was a business. Designed to implement what I believe is the business model of the future, which is shared values plus shared action equals shared profit, financial profit and social profit. In other words, you know, and this is my point about, you know, I believe that all business should do good and make money simultaneously.
I agree.
So when brands and businesses come together with their constituents, their audiences, and by that I mean, you know, consumers, employees, analysts, when they come together with them on the basis of values that you all share, which, by the way, is the most important requirement for a good relationship in life as much as business, you will never truly bond with someone if you don't share the same values. So when you come together with your audiences on the basis of shared values, and when you are then all enabled to collectively and collaboratively co-act on those values, to walk the talk together, you can make things happen in the real world that will benefit consumers, benefit society, and benefit the brand and its business. And so If We Ran the World was basically a co-action platform designed to help brands implement that business model.
One second. People is asking me here in the tables that if I can summarize a little bit of this platform that is basically designed to reunite good human intentions, right? And good corporate.
Yeah, but it's exactly. Exactly. It was born out of the fact that I observed the single biggest pool of untapped natural resource in this world is human good intentions that never translate into action. And obviously, from my ad industry experience, I know that brands have good intentions too, but just like people, they find it really hard to figure out how to act on them. And so the idea was to bring together consumer good intentions, brand good intentions into, as I said, shared action based on those values that will produce shared profit. And by the way, Pana, you know, I had to back burner If We Ran the World when Make Love Not Porn blew up. And by the way, If We Ran the World is the subject of a Harvard review, a Harvard Business School case study, because, you know, we were like 1 year old and a Harvard professor reached out and said, this model is so innovative, I want to write it up as a case study and teach it. So I had the surreal experience of going to Harvard, seeing If We Ran the World taught in lecture theatre, and it does exist as a, you know, Harvard Business Review case study. But when Make Love Not Porn blew up, I had to back burner it, because even I, superhuman as I am, cannot run two startups simultaneously. But I have to say, when I can get Make Love Not Porn on an even keel, I would like to reactivate If We Ran the World. Because, you know, funnily enough, all those years ago when I launched it, the world was not used to this concept of doing good and making money simultaneously. People said to me, oh, Cindy, you should be a nonprofit. But today, obviously, this is what every brand and business is looking at. And so it's more relevant than ever before. And I would really like to be able to relaunch
it. Nice. Yeah. And I like the way you see business, no? Because I agree on what you're saying. Like, I don't know, 15 years ago, 14 years ago, world was very different. Like, it's amazing how nowadays, you know, the quantic wave of changing every year. But basically what you're saying about collab, the word co comes a lot when I hear you. And it has to do also when I see what you're doing with Make Love Not Porn, that is you are a part of the business. It's not I'm exploiting you and you are, you know, I'm giving you this piece of money.
No, exactly. I designed Make Love Not Porn around that same business model. Shared values plus shared action equals shared profit, financial and social. Exactly.
Solo para desconocedores. El Martínez.
Yeah, that's beautiful, because I think that just from that standpoint, you're already doing good for the people that is with you, right? Like if you think about it, I don't know how do you see it, but we talk about, you know, capitalism, points of view, like social, whatever, is, I think that just the fact that when you're doing business, the people that is involved in the business is, you know, paid well and taken care of, and one, I think that they become, like, in heart, their heart is more with you than not only, you know, because of the money.
Absolutely. And you know, Paula, we have had Make Love Not Porn stars submit videos who didn't even realize they could get paid for them. You know, they believe in our social mission. They want to help it. You know, a number of them had no idea that they could also make money.
that's good. I think that social part of the business, that's something why I will invest. And I like the fact that you're doing this micro investment or being micro partner of Make Love Not Porn. Interesting, because I think it also has to do, like, I do support and I want to be part of the actual movement. Ooh. Kind of, no?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, on WeFunder, people can send messages with their investments. And I'm just so blown away and touched by the amazing messages we get about why people want to put, you know, whatever money they can put in it. It's really, really moving.
Yeah. And can you tell me some of them, the one that touched you the most or that are interesting.
Honestly, there are so many. I mean, if you go to wefunder.com/make-love-not-porn and you look at the buzz section, you know, it's what people are saying. That you can read them all there. And also, okay. I post them regularly on my social channels, on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. They're just a ton of wonderful, wonderful messages.
Yeah. Wait, no worries. I'll put it down in the episode, okay? Sorry, the people is asking. You know, people start asking, always, you know, interrupting me. Oh, by the way, cheers. Cheers.
Cheers. Very
interesting.
Cheers.
So do you still come into Cannes, Cindy, or is it something that you are so focused now in your company that are you coming this year?
I only come to Cannes when somebody pays to fly me in and put me up, and ideally pays me to speak. So I've done that a few years, but I will be back at Cannes Lions this year because it is the 10th anniversary of the Glass Lion Awards.
Right.
And I was the inaugural jury president 10 years ago, and so Cannes Lions asked me to come back and be the jury president in the 10th anniversary year.
Oh, so, that's beautiful.
Yes,
so
I will be there.
I will be able to share this virtual martini, but you know, like a real. Tell me a little bit more. I would love to see your point of view on how those 10 years, how do you see the shift? Because I do believe that Glass Lion, it really came to put something in the festival that was needed, right? And speaking on how you've seen the change, is different now than what you used to be when you were a president?
Let me turn that question back on you, Pana. Look around you. Do you see change in our industry?
I do. I totally see that what I was saying is amazing how in the last 10 or 15 years it's totally different, no? And I do believe that the things that we're speaking now, right? Like collaboration, it's not only about are we doing something to equality, because it's, for me, it goes more like deeper into more like are we changing our mind on how we behave between human? That's what I see.
And I do not see that change in our industry.
Not at all.
No.
But in the world, do you see it in the world?
And I don't see it in the work, because there are not enough people who are not white men doing the work.
Sorry, I thought you were... No. You're talking about the industry, the advertising industry.
I'm talking about the advertising industry, and I'm talking about the advertising industry's output. And as long as an industry whose key target is women, because we are the primary purchasers of everything, the primary influence of purchase, as long as an industry whose key target is women continues to be dominated by men, no, we do not see equality, and we do not see the creativity and disruption that would come from the female lens.
Okay. Yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think that I see a different world that we were 10 years ago in the things that we are talking. Maybe what I see that I don't like is the quota. Like now agencies trying to be politely correct on, but I have a woman in my board. And, you know, like sometimes I feel that as more like a cosmetic point of view than a real change in the industry.
Yep. Change will only come when, it's very simple, when powerful men in our industry hire into equal power with them brilliant women they feel threatened by.
And how do you do that without that being something that is cosmetic? That's the point of view. Like I don't know how you. I think that it has to do with the change of the men in that men
absolutely.
That you're saying.
Absolutely.
that they don't feel threat because of that. I mean, there's a lot of things that has to happen. So what would you do when you go to Cannes this year? What are you going to talk to about? How do you think we could do to actually change?
Well, I'm going to Cannes to judge. So I'm going to be closeted away with my jury for at least 3 days. So that's what I'm going to Cannes to do.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I was thinking more like if, because I think that, again, this Martinez is the right place to actually talk about these things that we're saying. Like, sometimes even a small talk can do much more in terms of, you know, thinking about what we're doing, right?
I don't think, unfortunately, small talk is affecting big change in our industry, sadly.
Okay, so how do you think the change should be done? As someone that really blows it up.
So I used to think that we could make things change within the system, and I've given up on that. And now the only way to make change is outside the system. So I exhort women, black people, people of color, LGBTQ, people with disabilities in our industry, start your own industry. And what I mean by that is start your own business, because when you do that, you can make it work any way you want it to. And when you do that, you are starting the industry we all want to live and work in. But start your own industry and make an absolute goddamn fucking shit ton of money. That is the only thing that will make the closed loop of white guys talking to white guys about other white guys look over and go, fuck me, they're making all that money doing that, we'd better do it like that too. That's the only thing drive change.
I like that. Cheers to that. Cheers. But thank you. I mean, Cindy, has been really inspiring seeing someone with this cut in the table saying the things that I think that are important. I hope to see you at Cannes this year, and maybe have a small talk. Who can change? I don't know.
Panik, great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you on the Croisette and maybe over a Martinez cocktail at the Martinez.
Totally. Thank you very much, and all the best with Make Love Not Porn, and I will go there to support because I like it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Panik.
Thank you.
Take care and have a great day.
Todos los derechos reservados y todos los torcidos depravados. El Martínez.
Y terminé la noche y bueno, dije, oye, ¿y por qué no me hago un dinerito extra por acá, no? Y me doy de alta en la plataforma. Puse mi perfil, lo abrí y bueno, cuando le vine a contar a la Marley la idea, no le encantó. No le encantó, de hecho, dormí en el sillón esa noche. Y este episodio lo estoy grabando desde mi auto, que ya lo presuricé, por cierto, y por eso se oye también. Pero bueno, espero que estas aventuras, donde según yo era para que el amor le ganara al porno, pues no me lleven a separarme, ¿no? Mientras tanto, yo aquí sigo viendo la plataforma, está buenísima. Bueno, pues nada, que siga la fiesta. Ahmed, sí, pónmelo para oído desde el auto, desde acá. Dale, y dile a François que vaya preparándose otra. Venga, pues. Abrazongo.
Este episodio fue mezclado y musicalizado por el gran Ahmed Cosío en Ciudad de México.
Locución de la voz Marley Figueroa desde L.A.
Investigación y booking Natalia Visione desde Buenos Aires. Escrito por Sebastián Arrechedera. Redacción y redes sociales Rogelio Galván desde Ciudad de México.
Una producción colaborativa de Rainbow Lobster.
El Martínez. Un podcast bar mamalonamente ricototón.